Imagine, if you will, a world where we actually use something like a virus, something we usually think of as causing illness, but we use it to directly fight cancer. It honestly sounds a bit like science fiction, right? But it's fast becoming a reality in, well, in cutting-edge medicine. So today, we're doing a deep dive into this really fascinating area, oncolytic immunotherapies. And specifically, we're looking at the pioneering work of a company called Replimune. They are, believe it or not, engineering herpes simplex viruses, that herpes virus, turning them to powerful new allies against cancer. Okay, so our mission for you in this deep dive is pretty straightforward. We want to cut through the scientific jargon, really get to the core innovation behind these viral therapies. We'll look at how they're actually doing clinical trials right now and what exciting developments are, basically right around the corner. The goal is to help you grasp not just what they're doing, but crucially, why this could be such a big deal for the future of cancer treatment. And just so you know, everything we're discussing today,
it's pulled from publicly available info, Replimune's own clinical trial data, press releases. So you're getting the latest insights directly. All right, let's unpack this. It's still a bit mind-bending, right? Using viruses to fight cancer. I mean, most people hear viruses and think, get the tissues. How does this even begin to work?
Yeah, it's a fair question. And what's really quite fascinating here is how Replimune has taken specifically the herpes simplex virus type 1 HSV1, the cold sore virus, and they've engineered it. They've modified it to do this sort of double duty job. It's actually pretty clever.
Okay, double duty how?
Well, first, these modified viruses, they're designed so they can only replicate, only grow inside tumor cells. So they get in there, they multiply, and that directly kills the cancer cell, destroys it from within.
Okay, direct attack makes sense. What's the second part?
And this is really the key immuno part, right? This process of the virus replicating and killing the tumor cell, it actually sparks a much wider systemic anti-tumor immune response throughout the patient's entire body. So it's not just about that direct kill, it's also effectively educating the body's own immune system, waking it up to recognize the cancer and go after it everywhere.
Wow. Okay, so it's like pointing a spotlight on the tumor and sending out an alarm signal to the immune system.
That's a great way to put it, yeah.
So Replimune calls this their RPX platform. Sounds like a toolkit, basically, of these engineered viruses. Can you maybe walk us through the different versions? What's in the toolkit and how are they tailored?
Absolutely. So the RPX platform, it uses these modified HSV1 backbones as the base. But then each version, RP1, RP2, RP3, is enhanced. They've added different immune-stimulating components. Think of it like different attachments for a power tool, each suited for a slightly different job.
Got it. So what's the first one, RP1?
Okay, RP1. This is sort of the foundational virus in the platform. It's engineered to express two key things: GM-CSF, that's a cytokine, a protein that stimulates immune cells, gets them activated and multiplying, and it also expresses something called the fusogenic GALV-GPR protein. Now, that fusogenic protein, it's pretty important because it helps the virus spread more effectively from one infected cancer cell to its neighbors within the tumor.
Ah, so it helps it move through the tumor better.
Exactly. And this whole combination, the GM-CSF and the fusogenic protein, it's really designed to make what we call immunogenic tumors, think melanoma, certain skin cancers, tumors the immune system might already sort of notice a bit, make them even more visible and vulnerable to that immune attack, really turn up the heat.
Okay, so RP1 amps up the signal in tumors that are already somewhat visible. What about tumors that aren't? What was the next step with RP2?
Right, and that's a huge challenge in cancer therapy. So RP2 builds directly on RP1, but it adds another component, an anti-CTLA-4 antibody-like molecule. Now, CTLA-4, you can think of it as a natural brake on the immune system's T cells. It often stops them from attacking cancer too strongly.
Ah, one of those checkpoints everyone talks about.
Precisely. So adding this anti-CTLA-4 piece directly into the virus is critical for targeting what we call immunologically cold tumors. These are cancers, like uveal melanoma, for instance, that usually just don't trigger much of an immune response on their own. They fly under the radar. By adding the anti-CTLA-4, RP2 essentially helps release those immune system brakes right there in the tumor environment, allowing the T cells to become more aggressive and attack.
Okay, so RP1 makes the tumor obvious, RP2 makes it obvious and cuts the brakes on the immune cells nearby.
Yeah.
That's clever. And then RP3, you said that's the most advanced right now.
Exactly. RP3 takes that immune activation concept even further. On top of what RP1 and RP2 have, it adds co-stimulatory ligands, specifically CD40L and 4-1BBL.
Co-stimulatory ligands. Okay, what do those
Ah,
do?
think of them as additional go signals, like stepping on the accelerator for the immune cells. They're designed to stimulate even stronger, more robust immune responses. The idea is really to push hard, particularly in those really tough solid tumors that are notoriously difficult to treat. It's about layering multiple activation signals to really get the immune system fully engaged in fighting.
That is a seriously sophisticated way to engineer a virus. Okay, fantastic explanation. Now, the big question, how are these actually doing out there in the real world, in the clinic? What are the key results, the milestones we should know about?
Yeah, the clinical progress, especially for RP1, has actually been quite significant. Let's talk about RP1 combined with nivolumab. That's the checkpoint inhibitor Opdivo in advanced melanoma. The data from their phase 12 trial, called AGNT, has been really quite encouraging. Now, this trial wasn't just melanoma. It also included patients with other tough cancers, like MSI-high tumors.
Right. Those often respond better to immunotherapy anyway.
Correct. And also non-melanoma skin cancers, even some non-small cell lung cancer patients. So a fairly broad initial look.
And what kind of results do they see in adomitinib?
Well, the top-line data they released back in June 2024 showed an overall response rate, the ORR, of around 33%. And importantly, many of those responses were durable, lasting more than 6 months. Plus, and this is crucial, it showed a pretty well-tolerated safety profile. You know, side effects were generally manageable.
Okay, 33% ORR. Oh. How significant is that in this patient group?
It's actually quite meaningful. For patients with advanced melanoma, especially those who might have already had other treatments fail, achieving a response rate like that, and particularly one that lasts, is a big deal. It really suggests potential. And then even more recently, a preview for the big ASCO Cancer Conference in June 2025 gave some more detail. It confirmed that ORR around 32.9%, but also noted that about 15% of patients had complete responses. Tumor gone, undetectable.
15% complete response, wow.
Yeah. And what was really fascinating in that update was they saw that when they injected RP1 deeper into visceral organs like tumors in the liver or lungs, the response rates were even higher, around 42.9%. And they also saw systemic effects, shrinkage in tumors that weren't directly injected. That points back to that whole educating the immune system idea we talked about.
That's really compelling evidence for a systemic effect.
Absolutely. And all this strong performance, particularly the deep responses and the systemic effect, directly led the FDA to grant RP1 breakthrough therapy designation. And they accepted Replimune's biologics license application, the BLA, for review.
Okay, the BLA acceptance is huge. That means the FDA thinks there's something really substantial here.
It is, and they granted it priority review. So put this date on your calendar. The PDUFA target date, the FDA's deadline for a decision, is July 22, 2025.
July 22nd, 2025.
Okay.
If approved, this would be genuinely a landmark moment. It could be the first approved therapy in this specific class of HSV-based immunotherapies, and they're not waiting around. A big phase 3 trial called IGNE3 is already up and running. It's happening at over 100 sites globally. It's comparing RP-SUN plus nivolumab head-to-head against the physician's choice of standard care in advanced melanoma. So that's the definitive test.
That's incredibly fast movement. A potential approval just around the corner in a phase 3 already enrolling globally. Mm-hmm. What about RP2? We talked about its design for cold tumors like uveal melanoma. How's it doing?
Right. So for RP2 trials, the initial phase I studies looked at it in various advanced solid tumors, often combined with nivolumab, just like RP1. But the really interesting results so far have been in uveal melanoma. That's a type of eye cancer that's notoriously aggressive and very difficult to treat once it spreads. Phase 2 results there showed an ORR of approximately 29% across 17 patients, which, again, in uveal melanoma is quite encouraging. And importantly, the responses happen regardless of a patient's HLA-A2 status. That's a genetic marker that sometimes plays a role in how well immune therapies work.
So potentially broader applicability there.
Potentially, yes. And building on that promise, they launched a phase 23 trial in January 2025. This one is comparing RP2 against the combination of two other checkpoint inhibitors, Opdivo and Yervoy, in patients with metastatic uveal melanoma who haven't had prior checkpoint therapy. So again, aiming high in a very tough-to-treat setting.
It definitely sounds like these combinations are key. Are they testing that multi-pronged attack idea in other difficult cancers too?
Yes, absolutely. It's a clear strategic theme. There's a really interesting phase 2 trial, the identifier is NCT0573-3611, if you want to look it up, exploring RP2 or RP3, combined with atezolizumab and bevacizumab in colorectal cancer. Specifically, this is an advanced microsatellite stable, or MSS, colorectal cancer. Now, MSS-CRC represents the vast majority of colorectal cancers, and it's often quite resistant to standard immunotherapy.
Okay, so another tough nut to crack. What are atezolizumab and bevacizumab again?
So atezolizumab is another checkpoint inhibitor. It targets PD-L1, that's a protein cancer cells use to kind of hide from the immune system. And bevacizumab is an anti-VEGF drug, an anti-angiogenic. It basically tries to cut off of the tumor's blood supply.
Right, starve the tumor.
Exactly. So this trial is really testing a multimodal synergy idea. You've got the oncolytic virus stimulating the immune system locally, the checkpoint inhibitor releasing the brakes systemically, and the anti-angiogenic hitting the tumor's infrastructure, hitting it from multiple angles.
That makes a lot of sense.
And there are other RP1 trials ongoing too. For example, the ARTADI US trial, that's phase 12, looking at RP1 alone in skin cancers that can arise in organ transplant patients, another challenging situation. They reported some interim data late last year. Plus, they have collaborations, like studying RP1 with another investigational drug, INCB99280, in skin cancer patients before surgery. Lots of different avenues being explored.
Okay, wow. That's a whirlwind of clinical activity.
Yeah.
So let's just pause for a second and connect the dots. We've gone through a lot of trial data. What does this all really mean for you, our listener? Especially if you're interested in where medicine is headed. Why should you really care about these developments from Repli?
Yeah, it's a lot to take in, but if we connect it all to the bigger picture, I think there are several really key takeaways that make this incredibly relevant. First is that clinical momentum, particularly for RP1, an overall response rate around 33% in advanced melanoma might not sound like 100%, but context is everything. For these patients, many of whom have few or no other good options left, achieving that kind of durable response rate is genuinely significant. It's why the FDA granted priority review. It suggests a real potential to shift the treatment landscape for a group with high unmet need.
So it's offering real hope where options were limited.
Precisely. Second, there's the mechanistic depth. The way they've designed RP2 and RP3, adding things like the anti-CTLA-4 and those co-stimulatory ligands, it's not just throwing more stuff at the wall. It's a really clever, targeted biological strategy. It's specifically designed to try and overcome that immunological coldness we talked about to make these therapies work in cancers where immunotherapy often fails. That could open up treatment possibilities for potentially thousands of patients who currently don't benefit much from standard immunotherapies.
Right, expanding the reach of immunotherapy itself.
Exactly. Third is the clear emphasis on strategic combinations. We see it again and again, pairing these oncolytic viruses with checkpoint inhibitors, with anti-angiogenics. It reflects a broader understanding in oncology now that often the best way to beat cancer is with a multi-pronged attack. You stimulate the immune system with the virus, you release the systemic brakes with checkpoint inhibitors, maybe you starve the tumor too. It's about synergy.
Combining forces for a bigger impact. Makes sense.
And finally, don't underestimate the global reach. Replimune's running these major trials across the US, Europe, other places. This isn't just some small academic experiment. It signals a serious worldwide effort to validate these therapies and, if successful, get them to patients everywhere as efficiently as possible.
It definitely feels like a field moving at high speed with a lot of potential impact. So looking ahead then, what are the absolute key things we should be watching for next? What are the milestones?
Well, the biggest, most immediate one we've already flagged, July 22, 2025, that's the PDUFA date, the FDA's decision on RP1 plus nivolumab for melanoma.
That's the big one, approval or not.
Exactly. A yes there would be truly historic. It would validate this whole approach, this first HSV-based immunotherapy platform, and likely open the floodgates for more development in this area. It could genuinely establish a new category of cancer treatment.
Okay. And beyond that, potential approval.
Beyond that, keep an eye out for potential data readouts, maybe late 2025 or into 2026, from some of those combination trials we mentioned, like the RP2, RP3 combos in uveal melanoma and that tricky MSS colorectal cancer. Those results will be really telling about how well these strategies work in even tougher tumor types. And you're also seeing Replimune strategically expanding access through things like investigator-led studies and expanded access programs. That shows a commitment to getting the therapy to patients who might benefit, even outside the main trials, and also exploring its potential in other settings.
It is really clear that Replimune's RPX platform is right at the cutting edge, isn't it? Really rethinking how we use biology itself to fight cancer.
It really is. You know, with RP1 potentially on the brink of approval and RP2 and RP3 moving forward in these smart combination trials, they aren't just making new drugs. They're helping redefine how we can potentially harness the immune system, not just boost it, but really direct it to target, kill, and then create that lasting immunological memory against tumors. It feels like a step towards making more cancers truly treatable.
It really does. And it leaves you with a thought, doesn't it? If these late stage results do hold up, if RP1 gets that green light from the FDA, how might this whole new era of virus-based cancer therapies fundamentally change
how we approach the most difficult to treat cancers. And maybe even more broadly, what other kinds of research, what new avenues might it unlock using similar bioengineering tricks, perhaps even beyond cancer? Definitely something to ponder as you go about your day.